Good morning. You are listening to KBOO FM 90.7 in Portland, Oregon, 91.9 in Hood River, 104.3 in Corvallis, Albany, and KBOO.FM over the World Wide Web. This is More Talk Radio. I am Cecil Prescott, and this is being aired live on May 7th, 2018. Hope all are well, and we invite you to join us with your ears and your hearts as we continue building community and by listening to the voices of people here. Joining us this morning is Benjamin Dixon, who is an author and founder and editor of ProgressiveArmy.com. Byline here is an independent platform for the people. If you've had the chance, check out his podcast and hear the voices of people involved in issues that people should be aware of. So if you would like to participate in our conversation with Mr. Dixon, let me remind you that our phone numbers here are 503-231-8187. And join us with your thoughts and comments. Good morning, Mr. Dixon.
Good morning. Good morning.
How are you this morning?
I'm doing well. Thanks so much for having me. It's a pleasure.
Well, thank you for joining us. For our listeners, could you tell us something about the origins and the of ProgressiveArmy.org and .com, this purpose, and how did it develop?
Yeah, so ProgressiveArmy.com is a platform that I built about 2.5-3 years ago. I built it to have a community of support. I started with a podcast about 3.5 years ago, and the audience started growing very quickly. And so ProgressiveArmy.com started off as just, you know, a place for all of my supporters to go and hang out. It quickly evolved into something much more. We created a place where those listeners and other people could write because we realized how difficult it was for individuals with a progressive voice to have a platform. If you're not already a part of the establishment, it's very difficult to get in. And so we created an open platform for individuals to submit writing, and it just really took off from there. And it's been a great run so far.
And it sounds as if it's something that certainly you were intentional in developing, but perhaps you discovered that there were voices out there who came to the platform with things to say, and found it difficult in other media areas to have those voices heard. Could you tell us a little bit about your background in terms of, is it media background or what was your background?
So my background isn't in the media. My background in terms of education and training is in economics and political science, international relations theory, and some PhD work, all but dissertation at this point. Dissertation work in international development, focused on international security. So that's my background in terms of education. In terms of career, my background has been primarily marketing. And so, you know, I always had a passion for politics, passion for the issues, and more than a passion, right? There's some things that just get downright on my nerves. Yeah. And so those are things that I just felt compelled to speak out about. And from that agitation, seeing the real issues around us, that agitation forced me into political commentary and then subsequently ProgressiveArmy.com.
You're listening to More Talk Radio. I am Cecil Prescott, and our guest today is Benjamin Dixon, the host of The Benjamin Dixon Show and founder and inspiration for ProgressiveArmy.com, an independent platform for the purpose, for the people. And join us with your thoughts and comments this morning. Mr. Dixon, as you discover the necessity, I sense, in terms of getting I'm finding a platform for you to share your voice, and other people found this as a useful platform. What, in a short sense, what is your understanding of why is it difficult for progressive voices to be heard out of? Certainly, the means of production is held by few, but are there certain things in this era that are particularly are particular barriers for progressive voices?
Absolutely right. So there's structural impediments to progressive voices being heard in establishment outlets, our own establishment outlets, because let's face it, right? Not many media outlets want to hear you talk about seizing the means of production or even something modest as incremental change in terms of like healthcare things or fighting against the military-industrial complex. And the reason I say that they don't want those is because some of their top sponsors come from defense contractors or the healthcare industry or industries that are quite literally opposed to what we stand for. So it's going to be difficult to get, let's say, someone who's advocating the drawdown of 800 military bases across the globe to get press on, let's say, MSNBC, who runs ads from Northrop Grumman. And so long as the military-industrial complex and defense contractors have access or rather use their power to control access to media, then it's going to be very difficult for progressive voices to be heard all the way from major outlets like MSNBC down to smaller outlets. So that's one of the structural things. There are other things that I think are at play, but I think that's the structural impediment to progressive leftist voices.
One of the things that people, I think, historically have discovered over time, is in terms of developing independent ways of getting their message out. So whether it, in times of old, starting independent papers or community radio stations, or something today, you find the development of a podcast. Are people finding ways to get the words out towards their communities and wider?
Yeah, so I mean, the beautiful thing about this is that we're literally doing what was done at the founding of the country, right? Or has been done throughout history. We're starting our own independent platforms, and the barriers to entry have decreased or diminished significantly through the internet, right? It costs very little money to build you a website and make it accessible to other people and to start publishing. The difficult thing is growing that platform and getting a larger audience. And so that becomes the make or break you kind of scenario. What kind of resources do you have to grow your platform? What are you saying? Are you saying something significant enough for people to gravitate towards you? But at the core of it, we're doing the same thing that's been done throughout the history of this country and quite frankly, the world, is where we have something to say and we start our own platform to say it.
You're listening to More Talk Radio. I'm Cecil Prescott. Today is the 7th of May, 2018, and we're speaking with Benjamin Dixon. For your say, we invite you to join us at 503-231-8187 if you're listening live. And I was just checking to see if we have a call. Not yet. In terms of developing those independent platforms, and I think you mentioned also to expand it, what are ways in terms of developing skills to do that? In a sense of, I can be in my in the coffee shop and, develop my own, website and podcast, but
Right.
how does it get beyond,
So,
life?
You know, besides the technical skills, right, there is some technical skill involved in producing a high quality podcast and a high quality website, web presence, especially if you don't have a budget to pay other people to do it. So there are some technical skills that you should learn, but YouTube is there, and there's a vast library of knowledge there that you can learn all the technical skills that you need. You just have to have the patience to learn it. But beyond that, it really is having something important to say, something quality to say. And that's not as easily learned as creating a website or how to technically design a podcast. But what do you have to say? And a lot of times, well, I can't say a lot of times, but there are cases where people are just going out and regurgitating what they heard someone else say. Well, that's not going to grow you an audience. Like, what is your core message? Why did you get into this? What drives you? What makes you furious? What agitates you? And can you communicate a solution or dissect a problem in a fashion that is digestible by an audience? If you can merge those intersections, if you can find that intersection, then you're probably going to create something that people want to know or hear.
Benjamin Dixon with ProgressiveArmy.com. And we invite your views, 503-231-8187. In terms of not only expanding your base, but what are some of the impediments that people are discovering as they find these new platforms? So whether it's, the FCC regulations about the internet, some things, other barriers that people discovered. Certainly something, something happens and people like gravitate towards it and say, ah, this is the next big thing. And immediately the powers that be find ways to attempt to usurp it or to make money out of it. What are some of your thoughts?
So I don't believe so much that there are powers that be that actively try to subvert new entities. I think structurally, there's already enough impediments to growth structurally, right? No one is going to have to get involved in slowing down the growth of your podcast if you don't have funds or the know-how to market it, and the cost of marketing and the cost of growing an audience beyond just having something quality to say. Those are real barriers to growing your, the system is designed well enough to keep voices suppressed. I would put it like that. You said something interesting there that I think is important though, when you said buying those voices. Now this is the critical space, right? There are plenty of opportunities that I've had to have my voice purchased. And notwithstanding the fact that I think my voice is valuable and they can't afford me, the thing is like once the money gets large enough, then you start talking about really co-opting someone's voices, right? It takes a really strong individual to be able to take a $1 million a year contract and stay true to themselves. Or hell, I mean, heck, some of us are willing to sell out for, $60,000 a year. And so it really becomes it becomes a game of large platforms who see a growing voice and they want that voice. They want to purchase that voice. But then you have to ask yourself as an individual, one, how much is my voice worth? And then two, will I really allow someone to co-opt my voice or control or constrain my voice?
Yes, I think that's one of the things that I often sigh about because I read someone or hear someone and say, oh, that is a really voice that needs to be out there. And then, suddenly they have a contract with, this media company or that media company. And so I wonder, will their power of the power of their voice or their conviction be usurped by other consideration? But I suppose historically that's always been a challenge.
That's a difficult. That's the challenge here, right? And if you take everything that we're saying in totality, there's a great opportunity for voices to be heard because we are living in a democratized media space. But there's great difficulty growing that voice. And then there's the challenge of maintaining that voice after you've grown it, and after you've elevated it. And so these are some impediments that are that every single person listening to you and you've gone through it, and anyone who's stepped out of media, we all face those challenges every day.
Yes. You are listening to More Talk Radio here on KBOO.FM, your independent, commercial-free community radio station. It's been going for 50 years because of people such as you. Mr. Dixon, let's talk a little bit more specific on some of the issues that you've spoken about on your podcast, and somewhat related, I think, is in terms of not only finding your voice, but being able to either take, not necessarily take control of, but how do you, in terms of political power. So one of the ongoing struggle, both nationally and I'm sure in local community, is, you know, political organizations, political political parties. And, you know, I think nationally it's sort of like played out by this ongoing debate between, lack of a better term, you know, Bernie-crats and, say, the black populace, and in terms of finding, you know, is it economics? Is it is it racial? What is your sense in terms of nationally, in terms of the Democratic Party? Is that a place for black people to continue to put all our enemies energy in?
Energies, yeah. Wow, that's the million-dollar question, right? So you had Chance the Rapper last week or 2 weeks ago say not all black folks have to be Democrats, and of course that's obviously true. But in this two-party system and the way it's structured, it leans towards being a two-party system. Diverger's law, all right? It's always structured to become a two-party system. Even if we replace one of the parties, it still falls back into a two-party system. And in this two-party system, we really have a party, the Democratic Party, who does, quite frankly, take advantage of the black vote. There's no question about that. And there's not a Democrat on earth who can argue otherwise. I mean, they could try, but they can't. They take advantage of the black vote. But then you have a party that, quite frankly, just doesn't care about the black vote at all. Kanye West said one thing true in all of his life. He said George Bush doesn't care about black people. Well, we could say the same thing about the Republican Party. And you could tell by the direction that they're going now with Donald Trump and the endorsement of the KKK and the support of neo-Nazi groups and organizations, clearly detrimental to every marginalized community, every minority community. So we're stuck between a rock and a worse place, right? The Democratic Party needs to be held to account. They enjoy our votes. And so we need to organize even more strongly to demand that they take action on our behalf. And the other option is, well, get in bed with neo-Nazis and or at least people who are Nazi adjacent and sympathizers. Yeah. And so it's almost like we have a bad choice and we have a terrible choice. And so the bad choice is to, you know, go with a party that quite literally takes advantage of us every 4 years and then forgets about us when it comes down to our issues. But then the worst choice, the terrible choice, is to get in bed with the Republican Party. Now, some people say, well, Ben, there's obviously a third party choice. You can do the Green Party. You can do X, Y, and Z. But again, remember Diverger's law that I mentioned at the beginning. It's a political science term that leans towards two-party system. And we could see that evident by the Green Party in a full-on rebellion. People fully rebelled against the Democratic Party in 2016. Dem exit. I mean, thousands of people, hundreds of thousands of people exited the Democratic Party, and the Green Party was still only able to get 1% of the electoral vote across the entire nation, 1%. So we have to have some really difficult conversations about what to do next, but we need to be cognizant and fully transparent or sober and admit the Democratic Party is not necessarily a good place for Democrats, but we sure as heck can't go over to the Republican Party, who's in bed with Nazis in the Klan.
You're listening to More Talk Radio. This is my name is Cecil Prescott. We're speaking with Benjamin Dixon, a person with wisdom to share as he continues to find a platform for independent progressive voices in many ways. Give us a call if you'd like to share, 503-231-8187. So given the fact that we are caught between a rock and a hard place, how do you, what are signs that you've discovered in communities of people doing effective political organization within the two-party systems? Mm-hmm. Are there points in local communities that people have either taken yeah. over the Democratic Party or ways to find power outside of the, you know, the two-party system?
Yeah, so the first thing that comes to mind would be, to a certain extent, Democratic Socialists of America. They are doing some great organizing inside of, well, they're not literally inside of the Democratic Party, mm-hmm. but they obviously would align with the Democratic Party long before they would the Republican Party. And they are effectively pushing the Democrats to the left. They're endorsing candidates and candidates who endorse their platform. They support them, and we've seen some wins across the country. I think that's an effective organization for pushing the Democratic Party to the left. We need to see more organizations like that from a black perspective, right? We need organizations that can hold the Democratic Party, every single person. We see what the Democratic Party likes to do, same thing white liberals and white progressives like to do, those that are in power at least. They like to have black voices and black representation to talk about black issues, but not necessarily black voices to hold them accountable. And so we need external groups like DSA that are black oriented and black centric and black focused that will actively hold these politicians accountable, whether they like it or not. So those are some of the things that we can take and model from those successes and do it not only from an economic perspective, but also from a race perspective.
Excellent. We're speaking with Benjamin Dixon of ProgressiveArmy.com. Our numbers are 503-231-8187. Let's hear your wisdom. Let's go to William. Good morning, William. You're on the air.
Hey, good morning. So good morning, Benjamin.
Good morning.
Yes, good morning.
What is the best way to check in with your podcast to see if it's something that would be a good fit with the work that I do and what you are doing?
Yeah, I mean, you can go to thebenjamindixonshow.com. Which will take you directly to my podcast on Progressive Army. You can check it out on YouTube, Facebook, or Twitter, or Spreaker, iTunes, anywhere you get a podcast, you can find my podcast and listen in. I mean, I would say, you know, you can sample the show. All of our shows carry the same core message. We just tackle the news cycle, right? So we get whatever's happening in the news that day, and we dissect it from a progressive lens, both economically, racially, you know. So I think any sample that you get will give you a good representation of the work that I do.
Okay, great. Yeah, because I do some writing and speaking on economics, money, and finance. And I do it from the perspective of, I actually start with the definitions of economics and money and finance. I find that for the most part, we use those words interchangeably and never really examine what the definitions are. And by examining the definitions, and there's one specific definition of economics that I use, I find that there's it gives an entirely new perspective on the condition of humanity on planet Earth. So.
Okay.
Hey. Interesting. Yeah.
Hey, thank
yeah,
you.
I'm sorry?
No, go ahead. You wanted to finish up?
I worked with Buckminster Fuller briefly. I don't know if you're familiar with him and his work. He looked at really the universe as a single system, humanity as a single family, and said, what information do we need, what tools do we need, and what strategies do we need if we want everybody to be successful? So rather than just me and my family and my country and my country's allies, but if we break down mm-hmm. all the barriers and say, how can we have this planet be successful? How can we have all humanity be successful?
Hey, thank you
right,
so much.
Right.
Thank you, William.
You're welcome. Thank you for the work you folks are doing, and hope you have a great one.
Thank you. Buckminster Fuller, I haven't heard that name in a while. let's go to our next caller. Mike, I believe, is on the line.
Yeah, Cecil, I wanted to ask you a question. I'm relatively sure you're a Christian, or you believe in the Christian values. And the reason I'm mentioning this is because the Democratic Party is engaged in anti-Christianity. When you have open borders, the people that are coming into America are Catholics. So there's an anti-Christianity, basically the Antichrist, that the Democratic Party is engaged in through open borders. And also, it's not a Democratic or Republican choice. What's going on now is class warfare. So people should not get hung up on that, because the Democratic Party is definitely not for black people. The legal immigrants that are coming into this country, they're taking jobs and opportunities that black people have worked for centuries.
Okay, I think we got the gist of your comments. And first, I just want to, you know, not that I can be the spokesperson for all Christianity, but in point of fact, I think a central element is in terms of welcoming the stranger. But let's Benjamin talk about, you know, you often hear this argument about, you know, undocumented people.
I'm so glad you called in with that. So let's start with I'm a Christian, right? And the entire premise that you're going on is fallacious, and this is why. The United States, number one, is not a Christian nation. We may have an abundance of Christians. The founders, many of them were Christians. Some of them were agnostic. But it's enshrined in the Constitution, the separation of church and state, for a reason. That's so that you and I and everyone else who wants to be Christian can worship freely without impediment, right? But also, the way we worship freely without impediment is to ensure that other people can worship freely without impediment. So we can't put any stipulations on the type of faith of people to this nation, because we run the risk of putting that same limitation on ourselves. It's not always guaranteed that we're going to have a Christian president or a Christian Congress. And so to protect us, we have to protect the rights of other people. Number two, in terms of the class warfare portion that you mentioned, there is a class warfare being waged on America, and it's being waged primarily, preeminently, by the Republican Party. The tax bill by Donald Trump, I mean, they literally are giving trillions, $1.5 trillion to the wealthiest people and corporations in this nation. And you're worried about, and I mean, not disrespecting your concerns, but just see how this plays out. You're focused on the $8 or the $6 an hour job that an immigrant may come and take, when we're literally giving trillions of dollars away to corporations that don't even pay taxes right now. Amazon got away without paying any corporate taxes for 2016 or 2017, rather. And so here we are arguing over the a pittance of a wage being paid. Also, actually, before I even finish that sentence, one other thing here. These are corporations that are paying and creating situations for illegal immigration, right? We always talk about illegal immigration from the immigrant perspective, but what about the corporations that are profiting off of paying them the low wages? This is where the class warfare actually exists. Corporations are using immigrants as scapegoats. The Republican Party is empowering this. They're using immigrants as scapegoats, simultaneously looking for the lowest wage possible. And so because they cannot get away with paying us less than the minimum wage, they gladly welcome illegal immigrants into the United States, because they know they're not going to be compelled to pay them a livable wage or a minimum wage. And so I just think from the ground up, they have you chasing these straw men of arguments because of fear of immigrants. In reality, the people who are committing class warfare against us are the wealthiest people being represented by the Republican Party.
The Democrats are the ones that are for open borders. So it's the Democrats that are bringing slave labor into America. And it's the Democrats that are really attacking black people through these methods. Gentrification in Oregon took place on that Democratic watch. I can look at, you know, most of the black killings in America happen under a black president. So the Democratic Party is not for black people.
I'm sorry. I just can't. Your arguments are incorrect. So I don't know of many, if any, Democrats that are actually advocating for open borders. But even if we did advocate for open borders, these jobs that you're talking about, they are being created and sustained by corporations that are looking for the cheapest labor possible. So it's not as though they're looking and say, hey, I just don't want to give Jerome this job because Jerome is black. I want to give it to an immigrant. No, they're saying Jerome has to make a minimum wage, whatever the minimum wage is in your state. And we don't want to pay Jerome that minimum wage. So let's get some illegal immigrant over here so he doesn't even have to apply. We could pay him 50 cents a day versus paying him the minimum wage. So that's number one. Then I lost your other comment in terms of the Democratic Party not being for black people. I would say this, the black people need to hold the Democratic Party accountable on many issues. You talk about black on black crime. That's the other thing. Or you're talking about the killing of black people happening underneath a black president. Listen, there has been that's just factually untrue. There's been plenty of murders before Obama, during Obama, after Obama. The problem is not black on black crime. It's the fact that they're trying to lift that up to be a boogeyman to silence black people whenever we talk about systemic racism and police brutality. The reality of it is that crime happens in communities that you are from. White-on-white crime is a problem. Hispanic-on-Hispanic crime is a problem. Black-on-black crime is a problem. That's because our country is still overwhelmingly segregated. You kill people that you live next to, overwhelmingly. So the question is, if black-on-black crime is systemically a problem, white-on-white crime is systemically a problem, Hispanic-on-Hispanic crime and murders is a problem, then the real question is how far have we actually come in terms of integration when our communities are packed in this very segregated fashion?
Hey, thank you, Mike, for joining us and for sharing your thoughts. And I look forward to hearing from you next week. We're speaking with Benjamin Dixon, who is the founder of ProgressiveArmy.com and is the personality behind the Benjamin Dixon Show. Join us with your comments or questions, 503-231-8187. One thing that Mike mentioned and that I think has some truth within it that I affirm is in terms of his skepticism about the political parties and Democratic Party in particular, and just something we've mentioned earlier in our conversation. Given the fact, as you asserted, that for the most part there's a two-party system, what are ways in which people can hold the Democratic Party accountable, beyond, yeah, coming to our communities every 2 or 4 years? How do we hold them accountable?
Right. We run for office. Yeah. Let's just cut to the chase, right? So organizing is good, but being the person in office is actually better. Right. So we need to encourage as many people as possible to run, not for Congress, not for the Senate, run for your local, your commissioner, your city commissioner, run for your school board, run for these positions, because ultimately these are the people who need to be held accountable. Make them understand that their seat is not safe. As long as they feel like their seat is safe, they'll do whatever the heck they want to do. But if you can show them that their seat is not safe by, one, running against them, but then, two, really organizing a significant run against them, then they will have to recognize the voices of dissent that they are comfortable ignoring otherwise. So I would say your strongest tool in your toolkit is to run for office. Win or lose, run and let them know that they are not comfortable and they're not safe. Now, if running for office is not your thing, create a media platform or join a media platform or join an advocacy group that can quite literally put on the pressure. There's power in numbers. So make sure that you're aligning with people with numbers that have see eye to eye with you. Join an organization, whether it be Democratic Socialists of America, whatever group that you want to join. If they have the same focus that you have, then use that strength to hold those people accountable, and then make them pay, man. Like when they come, don't softball. Don't let them just stand up in your church and talk unchallenged, right? You have a actual forum. Hold them accountable. Social media is so powerful. The right clip of a town hall meeting will change the entire dynamics of an entire race. So utilize all the tools that you have at your disposal. Organize in large groups to hold them accountable. Then ultimately run for office yourself, because if you really believe in it, hopefully you won't flip on us once you get in office, and then we have to hold you accountable.
Exactly. That's the fear. As you were saying, making those observations, it occurred to me, as you listed the options, that one thing that we often come across is those who are affirming a purity in politics or tactics. So if you we have the right analysis and this is the way to do things, as opposed to others who have an equally sincere analysis or method of operating, but which we find difficult to work together. So if there's a skepticism about people in my community, who are real organizers, people on the ground, as opposed to people who decide to drink the Kool-Aid and run for political office, and then they are corrupted. How do we hold one another accountable, being respectful of the choices we make, and how do we stop fighting among ourselves?
Okay, so that's a great question, particularly framing it in terms of purity politics. I believe in it. It's hard, right? At times, I want to tell people with purity politics to just be quiet, because sometimes it gets out of control. It really does get out of control sometimes. But then on other issues, it's like you got to hold the line somewhere. If you don't hold the line, then you're letting them get away with anything, and then you just accept any Democrat. And that is the problem that we have right now. Right now, I think in 2020, on the national level, Democrats may just run anybody because they think people are so disillusioned with Donald Trump that we'll accept anything. Mm-hmm. And the reality of it is that that's not the truth. That's not the case. So we have to dig in deeper and understand our non-negotiables. What are your non-negotiables? And if that becomes a purity test for you, then quite frankly, that's your right to say this is a non-negotiable. It is a purity test, and it is what it is. But in terms of like the kind of infighting that it creates, you have to understand in this allyship only goes so far, right? In the left end of the spectrum, and I say it like that because we're not all Democrats over here. There's Green Party. There's Socialist Workers Party. There's so many different variations of people who are not Republicans, right? So on this side of the spectrum, we are divided in so many small groups, but we come together in some type of coalition, right? But there's a limitation to what you can expect from an ally, because your ally is only going to go so far with you. And it's important that you understand the limits so that you don't get surprised or hurt or sandbagged at a very important time. And so understand what your non-negotiables are and understand how far your ally, quote unquote ally, will go with you on that. Mm-hmm. And then understanding that limitations, you really have to ask yourself the question, is this the type of allyship that I want? And that's something that you have to answer on a personal level.
Definitely. Currently here in Portland, we have electoral primaries within the next couple of weeks. And those who live within Portland and Multnomah County, in one city council race, which is quite unusual for Portland given the demographics of it, there are three women of colors running for one city commissioner's seat, and on the county commissions, I think there are two or three women of color also running for a county commissioner's seat. So on the surface, at least, it seems like there's a wealth of choices, and I think here in Portland proper, one likes to wear a progressive banner, very prominently.
Yeah.
I haven't certainly filled out my ballot yet. And one question is, how do you make choices, and how do we succeed? There was one comment several comments I've heard is, in one of these races where three women of color are running for a seat and say, Why can't the communities of color just get together? Because, you know, you're all running against one another, and look who's going to slip in. What are some of your general responses around that?
I mean, so it's true, right? Especially in a primary situation, that's what happens, right? You have like 10 black people running for a spot, and then that one white person, they're able to galvanize the white vote, even on the Democratic side of the equation, and then they win. But the problem is like this is democracy, a democracy. You can't tell folks not to run. And if black people coming together means that we have to silence other people's voices, then what good can come out of that? So the real question is, if you want to know who to support, or let's take this from two different sides, the candidate. As a candidate in a sea of black people or people of color or whatever your demographic group may be that is overrepresented in that primary, you just got to run a better campaign. You have to run the best campaign. You have to run something that is unique. You have to, I hate the cliche, but you have to get out of the box. You cannot go and you have to stand out, right? You have to stand out, and you won't be able to do that if you're just running a usual standard fare campaign. And I think that's one of the biggest impediments, is that you see people are just running the same playbook over and over and over again. So really, how could we tell the difference between you and six other black people who have almost the same agenda, have the same talking points, same type of consultant, same Democratic playbook? You just won't stand out. So you have to find a way to distinguish yourself. But in terms of the voter, if you're trying to decide between all those black voices, then you really, I'm going to be quite honest with you, who gives you access? Who's going to listen? Who's going to give you an opportunity to hold your representative accountable? Because if they shut you out during an election, you better believe that you won't hear from them when they're in office. I mean, we as individuals, we have political capital too, and we need to flex it and say which platform, which candidate actually has a structured fashion to hear from their constituents or hear from their voters. Because if they don't do it during an election, chances are they will not do it during their term.
Thank you. You're listening to More Talk Radio here on KBOO.FM. I'm Cecil Prescott. We're speaking with Benjamin Dixon of The Benjamin Dixon Show. Stay tuned here on KBOO. At 9 is the Omol Variety Hour. Omol burrows down to the roots of the great issues of our time. Patricia Kohlberg reads from her article in Street Roots, The Life and Death of Vanport 70 Years After the Flood. And Connie Hallinan will be interviewed on the Iran deal, which Trump is likely to renege on tomorrow. At 10 on Locus Focus, Barbara Bernstein talks to Paige Embry, author of Our Native Bees, about the plight of the pollinators. At 11, Retired or Rewired explores aging in Portland with Dr. Karen Brown Wilson. And at 11:30, Madness Radio interviews Grammy-winning songwriter-singer Susan McKeown, who says ritual and music have the power to heal emotional suffering. All of this here on your community radio station, KBOO.FM. This is More Talk Radio. I'm speaking with Benjamin Dixon. Wisdom, give us a call at 503-231-8187, and let's go to Mike. Mike?
Good morning.
Good morning, Mike.
Yeah, wonderful guest. I wonder if you could share with us some good, strong, positive examples of some primaries being won with some flair, something out of the box or unusual, and what kind of visuals were there? Because as we know, it seems like the white population, or I suppose any majority, would need to be convinced one way or another, or lean, or see something, or become aware of some aspect of life that changes our hearts or minds. And I know it was always visual in the 60s and Birmingham and so forth with the water cannons and dogs. I mean, that was not a small thing. That was a huge thing that woke not just African-American people up, but white people up. And now we have cell phones with video is waking people up. And women fighting back with video. It's waking people up. So if you have some good examples that we can study, you know, maybe we can get some more women in there and black women and black men, and at least representing everyone, Americans' goals. So any some good examples there? Thanks.
Great. Thank you, Mike.
Yeah. No, absolutely. Great question. I think you should take a look at Seema Perez in Knoxville, the primary, the election that they won. Not a minority voice, but Brian Norwalk, he won a town council race in New York. Yeah, it was impressive, particularly if you look around the Doug Jones election night. Not Doug Jones, but all of the candidates who decided to run during that time frame, and they literally took on establishment candidates. They took on establishment candidates with banners, with not just banners, but like cardboard signs, and won against the establishment. So it's timing. Timing has a lot to do with it also, and that's why I bring up the Doug Jones scenario. His race against Roy Moore kind of really created an opportunity for individuals who normally would not even get an opportunity to win, to actually win. Lee Carter was a great race that I think folks should look at. I'm trying to remember exactly. Virginia, Northern Virginia was his race. So, I mean, there's quite a few examples of outsiders who are able to get in. And those are just three to name a few. In terms of like the visualization that you mentioned, in terms of like the issues and using that as a means of galvanizing support from white communities, you know, you hit it on the head, my friend. You said there are cell phones out there, you know, mobile video, and we're almost at an inflection point in terms of the curve of how outraged we get. And what I mean by that is, like, we're so oversaturated with images of police violence against black and brown people that it's almost hard to continuously get outraged over and over and over again. And so I would almost really ask that just when you see it one time, realize that it happens 1,000 times. Don't go and watch it 1,000 times. Don't look at it every single time it comes across your timeline, because you become desensitized and you don't really move. I'm saying this out of personal experience. Like, I have to cover these things. I cover them over and over and over again, like 3 or 4 a week, and you just become drained and desensitized where you see it and you're not even moved to an emotion anymore because you just see so many. And so I would ask for people who don't have the responsibility of covering it from a news perspective, just look at it one time and realize that it's happening everywhere all of the time. And I ask that you allow that one time that you see it to mobilize you, to radicalize you, and to become a voice. Because, you know, when we get weary in well-doing, right? No, when we get tired and we're desensitized and we don't have the emotional capacity to handle these issues anymore, that's when we quite literally need our white allies to, like, jump in there and fight this for us. And last week with the shooting, or 2 weeks ago, the shooting in the Waffle House in Alabama, I mean, that took the wind out of me. I really couldn't gather the emotional capital to cover that story. And that's why we need people who still have it to go out there and fight on our behalf, and don't wait for the next video, because the next video is coming, yes, but realize it's a problem after you see it the very first time.
Let's go to Mitch. Good morning, Mitch.
Yeah, it's interesting hearing Mr. Dixon here on KBOO. I wonder why we haven't heard him earlier. But one question, as I hear you subdivide all the people with grievances in this country and no voice, there is a larger group that contains all those multitudes of women, of people of color, of and that group with no voice are workers who for 50 years have been losing out. Outcomes, social policies. Anybody that's been in office, whether a Democrat or a Republican, can't point to a growth in working class. There's only been a shrinking and a disappearance of the working class. So my question to Mr. Dixon is very simple. What is it that prevents the working class from demanding access to media? And when I say that, I find myself using what little space there is, say on Yahoo News stories, where there are reader comments in Yahoo and now their owner, Verizon, would rather have people sniping at each other rather than discussing ideas. And they'll actually cut comments that are made ideologically that point out that on public radio, for instance, everybody thinks that's liberal and progressive. The fact of the matter is, every week is This Week on Wall Street, or it's Planet Money, or it's Marketplace, or it's Bloomberg News, or it's Business Insider. I can keep on going with the programs that public broadcasting has had, and there's not been one union demand for a program called Wage Slave Week or anything that would represent the viewpoints of the people who have been losing for 50 years.
Hey, thank you, Mitch.
Why has there not been the demand, Mr. Dixon?
Well, Mitch, let me start by saying, one, I think you should head that charge, right? And I'm not saying that to play you at all. I really mean that. You have a passion for it, and you've identified it. I spoke with Tom Hartman, who gave me, you know, early on, he mentored me, you know, just a few hours, but it meant everything. And one of the things he said is what you just pointed out, Mitch. He said that NPR, we need to take them. We need to take their lunch. We need to take them down because they are sucking all the oxygen out of the room in terms of liberal slash progressive thought because they present themselves as a bastion of
Mr. Dixon, I'm a wage slave and I can't make the rent. There are people at unions who get paid to do this sort of thing.
Yeah, Mitch, I'm getting there.
They have never organized a picket in front of OPB to demand a program called Wage Slave Week.
Right. I'm actually getting to that. I'm getting there. So the point is this, is that exactly what you pointed out, you know, is the problem, is that you have these major organizations that are going underneath the guise of being progressive or liberal that are actually everything but that. Now, in terms of the local union that may not be doing it there, it's not happening across the country. And the reason why is because most people aren't even aware of what you just said. Most people aren't even cognizant of the fact that they're getting fed neoliberal propaganda every day that they listen to NPR. And how can people actually organize something that they don't even realize is a problem? So number one is we need more people to understand like you do, just like I do, and to spread the word. I mean, you would be amazed. Well, maybe you wouldn't, but other people would be amazed that if you say that NPR is a propaganda machine, then you get pushback from progressives and liberals and even union workers, for that matter. So people don't realize it's a problem, number one. We have to expose the problem, and then we can organize. You can't organize against something that you don't realize is a problem. But I want to double back to something that you said at the very beginning in terms of subdividing into groups, smaller groups of grievances. Well, you know, I mean, I understand that very specific language. Here's the deal, right? If we are workers, most of us are all working class. I mean, most of us, if we get into the middle class, we're lucky. And that transcends race, that transcends gender, that transcends everything else. But there still are issues that do divide us even further, that are grievances, that are issues that we have to take up and we can't belittle or we can't minimize. And so while we actually simply put, we have to do both. We need to organize as workers in solidarity with one another across demographics, across gender, across race. We need to address that from that perspective because it is something that we can collectively do together. But we also cannot dismiss all of the other issues that intersect that may not be on your intersection, but they absolutely affect people every day, real life. I mean, here the case in point is the rise in white supremacy and the increase in police shootings of black people. I mean, this is a real material problem that affects thousands of people every single day. And so we have to do both and. We can't just do one or the other.
Hey, thank you so much for your call. We're running short on time. Do we still have time for that last caller? Okay, we have maybe 1 minute left. Good morning, caller.
Good morning. I'm interested in the fact that when we talk about women, you know, minorities running for office and so on and so forth, that often we vote to get these individuals, you know, maybe for the first time into a position, but then they're fighting a machine and they're fighting an establishment that has existed without them. So where does the support come from the community that once we get candidates where we want them, how do we stop them from being crushed?
Great.
Right. That's a great question. And this is a great place, I think, to end the conversation. It's simply this. We have to continue to create after we get them elected. We have to have institutions. We need think tanks. We need progressive think tanks, leftist think tanks. We need economic organizations that are leftist. We have to create these institutions and fill up some of those spaces on K Street and Wall, not Wall Street, but in the lobbying sector in Washington, D.C., to make sure that once we put them in there, they're not fighting by themselves, that they have an entire structure around them of actual organizations with actual funding to be there to support them so that they don't have to fight the establishment by themselves.
Thank you so much. Hey, thank you so much, Mr. Dixon, for taking some time and sharing your wisdom with us. We want to encourage our listeners to go over to listen to your podcast, The Benjamin Dixon Show, on progressivearmy.com. And I hope I'll have the chance to speak with you again. Thank you so much for sharing your time with us this morning.
Hey, thanks so much. Thanks for having me. It was a pleasure.
And stay tuned to the OMO Variety Hour here on your community radio station, KBOO.FM. This is Cecil Prescott, and you have been listening to More Talk Radio.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland, unless otherwise noted. The Engineering Committee meeting was rescheduled to be this month, Wednesday, May 9th at 7 p.m. KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Save the VA from Privatization on Wednesday, May 16th at 5:30 p.m.